All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus. That Santa Claus is what I'm gonna call you today.
Why?
Coming up, we'll tell you why the Eagles might actually be a better team with Nick Foles over Carson Wentz.
And we'll dive into LeBron's controversial comments about the NFL. But we start every day with a Whitlock. What you got today, y'all?
All right, if the Steelers miss the playoffs this season, here's the question Steelers executives will ponder next week. Is Mike Tomlin part of the problem or part of the solution? That's a different question than whether or not Tomlin is a good NFL coach. His record emphatically says yes. In 12 years leading the franchise, Tomlin's winning percentage is higher than Bill Cowher's and Chuck Knoll's. But good coaches get fired in the NFL all the time, as Mike McCarthy or Tony Dungy. Mm. You hire and fire coaches based on their ability to fix your team's problems. There's a problem in Pittsburgh. Yesterday, the team lost to the Saints and fell to 8-6-1, a half game behind the surging Baltimore Ravens in the AFC North. If Baltimore beats the Browns next weekend, Pittsburgh won't make the postseason, despite having arguably the most talented roster in the AFC. The Steelers are sloppy. They turn the ball over at an alarming rate. They're constantly involved in headline-making distractions. They're not good in situational football. They've lost 10 straight coaches' challenges. Their offense isn't balanced. It relies too much on the pass. Their head coach and franchise quarterback often seem to be on different pages. Can Mike Tomlin fix all that next season? I don't think so. Not in Pittsburgh. There's too much history. A culture has been established that Tomlin cannot repair in a single offseason. Yesterday, with 4 minutes to play and the Steelers ahead by 4 points, Tomlin called for a fake punt on 4th-and-5 from his own 46-yard line. The Saints stopped Pittsburgh fullback Roosevelt Nix 1 yard short. Nix and two other Steelers celebrated wildly, thinking he'd made the first down. It was the equivalent of Steve Harvey announcing Miss Columbia as Miss Universe.
She won.
The Steelers looked absolutely clueless. They looked exactly like a team that had lost 10 straight coaches' challenges, a team that had a player Facebook Live, a post-game speech, a team that had its coach interfere with a kickoff return, a team that sat its healthy quarterback until the Raiders took the lead, a team that split over the national anthem controversy. You follow me? Mike Tomlin isn't a bad coach. I'm not even convinced the Steelers will miss the playoffs this season. Baker Mayfield and the Browns are dangerous and incapable of beating the Ravens. But even if the Steelers back into the playoffs, that won't change the fact that Tomlin is stuck in the middle of a storm that he helped create and one he can't stop. Tomlin is part of the problem in Pittsburgh. He's not the entire problem, he's just part of it. If the Steelers move on from him, I won't object. All right, joining the show now, NFL Hall of Famer Eric Dickerson, NFL future Hall of Famer Tony Gonzalez, of course, my man Marcellus Wiley.
Oh, man, boy, what a letdown.
And that Canton Tommy did me.
Marcellus, is Mike Tomlin part of the problem?
No, not to the degree where it seems like the noise is louder than what's really going on in terms of content with this team and their failures and miscues. If you look at Mike Tomlin, we talk about him as a coach, and that's separate than is he still the issue in Pittsburgh. Second most wins of any coach right now coaching on the sidelines behind Bill Belichick. Never had a losing season, including this one. As bad as this one's been, he won't have a losing season on a 12-year record. So now what do we talk about with Mike Tomlin? The run-pass balance that you talk about. Pittsburgh is out of balance, and if you look at it, maybe that's just because of their offensive coordinator, newly appointed Randy Fickner. If I want to fix my issues this offseason, simply I can fire Randy Fickner and say, you know what, job not well done, not well enough, and then change up that dynamic between him and Ben Roethlisberger, who you've even said is not the best leader at that position.
Poor leader.
Mm-hmm. And so, therefore, maybe that is the quick fix. But to fire a guy who's number two on the list in terms of wins, I would start at number 16 all the way to 32. I would look at those guys, the ones who are not performing up to standard, up to expectations, before I go to a Mike Tomlin, who I think has done his job in terms of getting this team properly motivated. They lost their best running back, franchise running back. who was number two receiver. Then they lose the backup, who was amazing himself. And now they're down to a one-dimensional attack, which is focused on Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown. But Mike Tomlin, to me, not the issue. A lot more issues on this roster than that, Coach.
I agree with you, guy. You left nothing to say. Nothing left to say.
There's plenty
to say. One of the big things is I think that people kind of forget, because it's kind of getting lost in the shuffle through the season, is the Le'Veon Bell distraction. And that was a big distraction during the season. You may not think it's a distraction, but when you have one of your possibly, people say, at one point was the best running back in the National Football League. He doesn't report. Offensive linemen say he's coming in this week. Oh, he's coming in next week. Now they're in the locker making fun. We're taking this stuff out. I mean, that's a distraction. You can't put that on. You can't put that on Tomlin. That's football itself. Those are holdouts. And I think that's a big distraction, this football team. Yes, they have a lot of talent. I think they should make the postseason. I don't know if they will. You hope they're in the postseason because they have so much talent. But when I look at Ben Roethlisberger and Tomlin's relationship, is that a problem? Yes, I think it's become a problem for sure. I mean, but who are they going to go with, the coach or the player? I think the star players will always win that. But I don't think they'll get rid of Tomlin. And I don't think they should get rid of him.
Well, I think that's what it comes down to at this point. First of all, just looking at it from the numbers standpoint, winning coach, why would you get rid of him? I don't understand why
is
you would do
that. Part of the problem.
I don't think – yeah, you're always part of the problem. I think there's enough blame to go for everybody when you're losing. I think that's always – but
can he fix the problem?
Can he fix the problem? Yes, I think he fixed the problem. I agree with you what you said, Marcellus. Maybe the offensive coordinator is something wrong there. A lot of distractions, what you said, Eric. I think if the players don't like him, it seemed like obviously the situation in Green Bay – that was something that you could see right there. McCarthy and Aaron did not get along. He didn't like McCarthy, and McCarthy probably didn't like Aaron. He never said it. Therefore, the coach gets fired. Here, I don't know if I see the same situation. That's why I think they're going to bring him back.
Oh, there's all kinds
of – who do you replace him with?
There's all kinds of signs that Big Ben doesn't like Tomlin. Mm-hmm. They're never on the same page. Just even going back to the Raiders deal when Big Ben threw him under the bus. And, again, I think Ben's a poor leader. But to say that he can fix these problems when I think there's a disconnect between him and Ben, and there's no way in hell that Big Ben's going to allow him to fire this guy that's just had 1 year as the offensive coordinator, because Ben's going to say the offense wasn't a problem. Ben's going to say that, you know, Ben's not going to co-sign for that. And so this is very similar to the Green Bay situation and Mike McCarthy. I don't think he's a bad coach. It's just that the relationship between him and Aaron Rodgers reached a point where it's like, well, this can't be fixed. And I think we're looking at a similar situation here in Pittsburgh. And you fellas, y'all got to remember, they were 7-2-1 1 month ago. 7-2-1. And now they're out. They're probably, likely going to get eliminated. I'm not 1,000% convinced, but if Baltimore does what they're supposed to do, they're eliminated from the playoffs after being 7-2-1. That's a problem with that much talent.
Well, I wouldn't ring the alarm to the point where I would get rid of my winning coach, who has allowed us to win a Super Bowl championship, be in two Super Bowls, and has kept this thing rolling to the point where they haven't had a losing season despite a holdout, which end up being not returning to your team, and then injuries, and then that has affected their play calling. If you don't want
to bad teams they've lost to.
Okay, and you know what? Look at the good teams that they've won.
That's the issue, though. They play down to their competition a lot of times. There's a lack of consistency from the Mike Tomlin team. This isn't a call for him to be fired, but there is a problem, and then the Steelers have to ask themselves, can he fix it? And that culture set, they've been inconsistent for a long time.
Antonio Brown had a career year, is having a career year. If you have Le'Veon Bell or even his backup, do you think we're still having the same conversation in some of these games? Miscues are not always on the coach. Hey, Juju, just hold on to the ball while you – he was still alive on that play, so he was fighting. And what happens, as Tony knows, as you know, when you fight for those extra yards, that's our opportunity to strip or to get you in an inopportune position. So I just can't put all this on Tomlin. I understand your issues, but I don't see the attachment to Tomlin necessarily.
And you're right about James. James, think about it. If you have Le'Veon Bell in the lineup for the whole year, let's just say that happens hypothetically. You can add them another 3 or 4 wins for sure. Most definitely. James Conner got hurt at the wrong time. Mm-hmm. That's probably another 2 wins because I think they will keep running the football. When you don't run the football, I see it with my own team, the Rams. All of a sudden, you become a passing football team. That play action don't mean nothing because you know, they're going to run the football. They're going to throw the football.
Fake punt yesterday.
Eesh.
Fake punt. From your own 46, 4th and 5, you could leave your quarterback out there. This is what I'm talking. Then you got the players celebrating as if they had made the first down. There's only one team I can think of that would happen to. That 4th and 5 deal, the players celebrate. What other team would have that lack of self-awareness other than the Pittsburgh Steelers? It's been a common problem and issue. And yes, they've won a lot of games. They've won a Super Bowl.
What's the other team? Let me just hear.
I can't think of another team.
Oh, I know Carolina did last week when Cam Newton was playing. He thought he had a first down. He did, but guess what? He didn't call timeout when he should have, and then that came back to haunt them. So that's 2 teams, and if I go through all the teams out there, Bill Belichick had a 4th and 2 on his own 25, I remember a couple
years
ago.
Wasn't people out there celebrating, dropping the ball, and they clearly a yard short.
Fire the coach. Fire the coach.
The coach for it.
Everybody celebrating.
There's a Tony, they act like I'm crazy. Like, this isn't the Kardashians of football.
It is.
And this isn't a soap opera every year. But the star of the soap opera, he's blamed. And again, it's not a call to fire. But I'm just saying, what they make decisions on is, can this guy fix? Because there is a cultural problem in Pittsburgh. They're too loose. They're not situationally sound. How the hell do you lose 10 straight coaches' challenges? 10 straight.
You're right. There is a problem.
Call.
There is a problem.
10 straight games, though. Some teams out there losing 10 straight.
But there is a problem there. I hear what you're saying. There is something going on. This could be the most talented football team to never make the playoffs. I mean, they got Hall of Famers on that side of the ball. Ben Roethlisberger, Antonio Brown, and those guys can flat out play. They got a good offensive line. They got the young Watt coming off the edge. Yeah. They have players. And for them not to be in the playoffs, I think it's sad for us as fans because we want to see the best teams in the playoffs. What is the alternative, though? They're dysfunctional. They have their problems, but they always find a way to make it work. This is the first time it's going to bite them in the butt, and it ain't going to work out. But maybe they can fix that out during the offseason.
I don't want to put words in Terry Bradshaw's mouth because clearly he can speak for himself, the title of the show. But this is what Terry and other longtime critics, they say, this day has been coming. This isn't a shock to them. Loose ship eventually sinks.
Respect to Terry Bradshaw and all those Pittsburgh greats. And what is it, up12.com or something, that it is like the Pittsburgh Steelers blog. And boy, if you ever, was it 12 Up? Yeah, if you ever go to a team's blog, oh my God, prepare for fire because everyone is going to get it. Mike Tomlin and these former players are too close to see it from our vantage point. They're in the forest and can't see the trees. If y'all get rid of Mike Tomlin, like Tony said, good luck finding something comparable or even close to being better. Like, I don't think that this is a better situation.
Let's pump the brakes.
Yeah.
In 50 years, they've had 3 coaches. Show me their history of picking
and who's won the most games of all.
But just show me a history of them picking a bad coach.
Okay, they have it, but they've also picked the coach who's won the most of all of that illustrious history. So where are you going to go from
there? Won the most. He's won 4 Super Bowls.
Okay,
and that's what they play for.
Not win percentage.
Bill Cowher's won a Super Bowl. Same as Mike Tomlin.
You can't fire him though.
You can't
fire him. You can't.
You would object if they did.
I would be shocked if they fired him.
I would be shocked too because that's not their history. And he's not a bad coach. I don't know if he's the guy to fix this problem. Time for a big story, Whitlock and Wiley. Tony Gonzalez and Eric Dickerson are back. Let's head to Seattle, where the Seahawks used a dominant running game and timely throws by Russell Wilson to beat the Chiefs and clinch a playoff spot. These two teams seem to be going in different directions. Pete Carroll's squad has won 4 of their last 5, while the first place Chiefs have lost 2 straight. Marcellus, I said this, I love the Kansas City Chiefs. I love Patrick Mahomes, love the offense, Tyreek Hill, Andy Reid's play call. But you got to play defense at this time of the year.
Yeah.
And it's starting to show up the Chiefs' lack of defense and these other teams that play defense and rely on the running game, I like the Seahawks more headed into the playoffs than the Kansas City Chiefs. I know that game last night was in Seattle, and Seattle's supposed to win. It's hard to win up there. But I just think they're built better for the playoffs than the Kansas City Chiefs.
I still would bet on the Chiefs, even though I know that's a winning formula. Run the football, have an electrifying passer in Russell Wilson, and play some good defense. And you're right. Look, the Chiefs have lost games where the defense gave up 28, 40, 51, 30. Lord, you imagine going to that team meeting room and you sitting there looking at the other half of the squad like, y'all bums, bro. Like, we lose a game and y'all give up 51? Like, let me move forward. Patrick Mahomes is the MVP. Put some respect on his name when you say it now. Has he won that? Is that over?
Stop. I think so.
Aaron Donald, come on. A lot of sentiment
for Drew Brees, but yeah. Again, I just think their defense is going to catch up with them.
Look, history tells us this season that their defense will let them down. But I'm still going with that offensive attack. That's still a game that they could have won. Even in their losses, Patrick Mahomes plays tremendous. And they're still in position to win these games. They're not getting blown out any of these games. So I think that they're going to be able to go through these hardships and learn when it matters most in the playoffs. I'm betting on the Chiefs.
I have get me started on this team. First of all, we're critical to the ones we love the most. Okay. So yesterday on the show, I took a little heat because I was saying that this is going to happen. I picked Seattle to win this game. And the reason is because of that defense and because I've been there. Were you 2003?
Yes.
We had the number one offense in the NFL. Priest Holmes, Hall of Fame firmers on that offensive line. Worst defensive ranked in the NFL. Went to the playoffs, number one seed. First round bye, got bounced by Peyton Manning. They came in there. They didn't punt one time. We didn't punt one time. The offense is going to show up. I love Patrick Mahomes. And that offense, there's no problem with it. And it should get better if Sammy Watkins comes back. But 38 points, defense, all you have to do is hold them to 24 points, 28 points, 30 points. I mean, that's the only way we can win this game is if you guys hold a team to less than 30 points. And they can't do that right now. They haven't shown they can do that. So I'm scared right now. And I'm looking at you comparing these two to answer your question. Yeah, the Seattle Seahawks, I have more confidence in them unless the defense can get something going in the direction to hold these opposing offenses because it's going to light up in the playoffs. It's going to light up in the playoffs. I'm scared right now.
Well,
I hope I'm wrong.
I said what you said. I said the Seahawks win the football game. But, you know, when you go to Kansas City and play a playoff game in Kansas City, that's a real home game. I mean, I know you say y'all lost, but, you know, this is a different football now. That's a real home game in Kansas City. I think with Seattle, they have to go on the road and win. And they're a good road team, but I still like Kansas City at home. I know the defense isn't playing, but you got a quarterback that can score, pick it up 30 points quick, real quick. You have a defense that has 49 sacks, second in the National Football League. I think at home, some of those big plays, they'll make up one or two big plays they have to and rely on their quarterback to get them in.
The thing I think we're all overlooking here, and it really came to me last night just watching this game and watching what Seattle's doing. Pete Carroll is establishing himself to me as the second best coach in the NFL. For this dude to run out the Legion of Boom and to reinvent it with a different group led by Bobby Wagner, to do that over again, and then to transition the offense the way that he has and figure out a way to protect Russell Wilson and just to play a whole different style. So, you know what? All the other leagues gone pass happy. We're going to run the ball, even though we have a hell of a quarterback. We're going to run the ball and let this guy make timely throws. Pete Carroll is a better coach than Andy Reid. I've only seen Andy Reid coach one way. He's going to throw the football. Threw it in Philadelphia, threw it in Kansas City. In Kansas City, he's just had horrible defenses or whatever. But Pete Carroll has a decided advantage to me over Andy Reid. Pete Carroll, I hate to, it's kind of crazy to say, but he's a bit underrated. The guy, what he's doing and has done with this team on the fly to sweep those guys out and to come right back with a team this dangerous the next year is incredible.
Yeah, and he also called that play on that goal line in the Super Bowl.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that guy.
You imagine Mike Tomlin did that. See what happened? I ain't going to go there. They also lost to San Francisco just the week before we saw this great KC win. Like, we can't We can't just start parsing things the way we want to see it.
But did you expect them to be in the playoffs this year?
I did not.
Swept out
I did not. I bought into Richard Sherman's comments that, hey, this team is going to be subpar. They're going to miss the Legion of Boom. But they were forced to get in this position. And they're not forced to be a run dominant team. But you know what? It's to protect Russell Wilson, because Russell Wilson takes a lot of hits, whether it's his own doing or the offensive line issues. Russell Wilson's always been one of the most targeted quarterbacks in terms of hits in the pocket. So what do? Hand the ball off. Hand the ball off. Bring that safety down. Stop him in the box. Oh, Russell Wilson's still effective, potent out of in the passing game. So I look at this as simple as this. The Seattle Seahawks are going to go out there, and they're going to run the football. There's a way to stop that. Then you got to deal with what? Doug Baldwin, respect, played through injuries this year and still a great receiver. But there's a way to slow down their passing attack. I saw it 2 weeks ago. I didn't see it so much from Kansas City Chiefs. But the 49ers were able to contain them more so than a lot of people probably took witness of. That's not a primetime game. Seattle, I think, is going to stumble. Kansas City, number one seed, or maybe not number one seed, but still so potent, I think they're going to be able to overcome these issues.
Well, Seattle's a running, they run first. I mean, and to me, you know, I like a running football team. I'm big on the run. I think the run sets up everything. And I think they're good, but I don't know, like I keep saying, they have to go on the road and play all the games. And how well can you play on the road consistently? It's hard to do. I mean, I think the team that did it last was the Giants winning the Super Bowl when they beat the Patriots. Yeah. It's hard to go out there and run that football. I mean, Russell Wilson is a guy that you can't tackle him. He's like, bing, bing, bing. He's like Mario Brothers. He's running around everywhere. But I like them, but I just still feel it's going to be hard for them to go on the road, go into the playoffs, and win in New Orleans. Can they win?
Probably going to open in Dallas.
Yeah. But
probably against Dak Prescott.
And the way that defense
they can
win.
They can win that game.
But the one in New Orleans, that's the one. Can they win that?
And even there, though, come on. Would you really fear them going in there? Would you be shocked if they go in and beat any team on the road? I'm not going to be shocked. And I love that you said that about Pete Carroll. He is the second best coach in the NFL. Just look at what he's done. And I know you said they just lost to San Francisco, but over that body of work of time, what he did this year, and the guy, if I had to come back and play, I mean, that's the guy I'd want to play for. Mm-hmm. I mean, he has fun, but he does it with discipline. And he has no problem with running you up out of here. And I think that's the sign of a good coach. And that's what Belichick doesn't have, as far as I'm concerned. It doesn't look like
that's
guys
enjoy
Tony
wants to come back.
How about Seattle?
Like
tight end.
Want to come back?
Get that Super Bowl run.
Come on, we take it to the ring.
Tony Gonzalez and Eric Dickerson are back. Let's move to the Cowboys, who won the NFC East after taking care of the Bucs Sunday. Dak Prescott did just enough for Dallas, throwing for a touchdown and running for another. Meanwhile, on Saturday, Lamar Jackson threw for 204 yards for the first time, for over 200 yards for the first time in the Ravens' dominant win over the Chargers.
Dominant?
Since Lamar was named a starter, both quarterbacks have won 5 games, but are doing so in completely different styles, with Lamar dominating the ground game and Dak doing it through an efficient air attack. This is fascinating in terms of which of these two quarterbacks do you trust the most headed into the postseason. And it's fascinating because, one, Baltimore is only going to ask Lamar Jackson to do what he can do. Mm-hmm. Throw it occasionally, but lead that running game. I don't think it'll be enough, though, in the postseason, and that's why I would choose Dak Prescott, even though I believe he's very limited in the passing game, and even though I think Dallas sometimes asks him to do more than he can do.
Yeah.
They're going to put him in harm's way. But eventually, you're going to have to make some throws in this league, and I just think right now Dak's more equipped to do it than Lamar.
I don't think so. Was in those elements, went to the Chargers game, fully confident because my co-host told me, oh, the Ravens are going to get stomped out the yard by the Chargers. And I was sitting there with that kind of arrogance and, oh, from play one, even my boy tapped me. He's like, hey, Ravens look better than the Chargers. I was like, I know. Then I was like, all right, they're going to wake up and realize they're playing a real team. Lamar Jackson has grown in confidence with his arm. I didn't see one errant throw. I saw good incompletions. I saw balls hitting guys in the chest so fast that they dropped it, or the defenders would make a tremendous play. But in terms of incompletions and bad throws, he's grown in confidence. 22 pass attempts. That's more for him. 200 plus yards. That's more for him. And he has a live arm. There's going to be a problem in these playoffs. With that defense, the way that they control the running game and time of possession, and a quarterback who's starting to believe that I can throw the ball, he can fling it with the best of them. I mean, he can fling it. Now, is it going to be accurate all the time, playoff football? We're going to stop your running attack, plan B football? Yet to be seen. But in terms of him just being one-dimensional, that was yesterday's news. This dude went out there and beat the Chargers, and he beat them because he was a capable quarterback, even in the pocket.
The defense was incredible.
That's what I was going to say. He beat them because that defense was incredible. Yeah. I mean, look. Which one would I take? Dak Prescott, for sure. I mean, Dak has never had a – he's only been there, what, 3 years? Never had a losing season since he's been there. And I agree with you. Sometimes they ask Dak to do too much at that position. But I think he does enough. He knows that position better. I think he's more of a seasoned quarterback. And both of these guys are still really young. I mean, he's in his first year. Lamar Jackson is in his first year. And Ozzie Newsome said, I told you this before, he liked him when they – because I asked him at the Hall of Fame, I said – tell me about Lamar Jackson. Do you think he can play in the NFL, or you going to think he's going to be like a shotgun quarterback? He said, no, Eric, he can play in the National Football. He said, it's going to take some time. And I don't think he thought it would happen this year, but it's here right now. But still, if I had to take a guy, I would have to take Dak Prescott.
Yeah, well, I think the most dangerous one is Lamar Jackson. Yeah. I mean, just watching him, he's electric. He can take off. He can go. He can take it 90 yards. I mean, if he's down in his own part of the field. But who I trust more, it's Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott, he doesn't turn the ball over, but neither does Lamar. But I think with that running game with Ezekiel Elliott, I think that it kind of saves Dak where he doesn't have to do too much at times. I mean, the game that they won yesterday, they clearly won it because of the defensive side of the ball. They defense scored a touchdown, got a turnover inside
their 10-yard. I'm
talking about the Dallas Cowboys with Dak. That is why Dak is able to have so much success. Otherwise, I think they would have lost. They're both winning by their defenses, and they're limited at that position. But going into the playoffs, definitely Dak Prescott. Lamar, he's still got a little bit ways to go. He has the higher upside as far as I'm concerned.
Isn't it concerning that they asked more of Dak, but there's still an issue with Dak satisfying that ass? Like, there are times where Dak could have sealed a game away, New Orleans game or something like that, and you're like, make that throw. Oh, I don't make that throw. You see Dak around, make a costly turnover. He still has a lot of turnovers, fumbles more so than interceptions. Versus Lamar, you're like, I don't even flip that page to say he's ready for this. I stay on this page, and it's something about that concise messaging from coach, coordinator to Lamar. You're going to do what you do, and that's it. And I just trust him. I saw it. Look, I know the defense played amazing against Phillip Rivers. He didn't look like the same Phillip Rivers. The offense was not good. But Lamar was also making plays to give that defense life to continue that ass. That game was close. It wasn't a dominant performance in terms of the score. It was 16-10. Chargers had the ball driving, and then the Gates fumble. They score on that. It's 17-16. More likely they win. But I'm looking at Lamar like he was out there giving guys confidence because he was capable enough as a quarterback, not just as a running quarterback.
Listen, I do think Lamar has exceeded my expectations and has improved. Mm-hmm. But when I watched that game, there was at no point after the first quarter did I really believe the Chargers could win that game. Baltimore's defense was just way too amazing.
Yeah.
That was like Ray Lewis 2000 perfect storm defense from Baltimore. I think it'll be interesting whether Baltimore can sustain that level of defense, because when I watch it, it's a group effort. They're playing on a lot of emotion and energy. I don't see the individual stars in that defense like I saw with Ed Reed and Ray Lewis in their prime. And so some of it I think is like, it's great that they're doing it, but it's like, can that be sustained? I almost think Baltimore is going to have problems this weekend with Cleveland.
You know, it's weird being on defense when you look at your offensive unit and you see their issues, their handicaps. It makes you play better because you're like, we have to do this. Where if you're in Dallas, you see Ezekiel Elliott, you see Dak. Could be, I mean, Ezekiel's
Mari
amazing.
Cooper.
Yeah, Mari Cooper. You can kind of start sometimes say, hey, they can help us out too. And if that creeps into your mind, that's where the points go. They gave up 20 this week, but they still won. But the defense also scored as well. I just think that defense realizes there's only one way we can win. It's on our side of the ball. Where Dallas, some of that is being borrowed by the offensive side and those stars.
What about when you get to the playoffs and if you're playing against them, you're going to do everything in your power to stop his running.
Yeah.
And make him beat you with that arm. He had one game over 200 yards.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's what scares me about him going to the playoffs, because once you get to that, you know how it is. Everybody steps their game up, and they're coming to hit you now. Mm-hmm. You defensive players, they're gonna, and he's been knocked out of two games. Yeah. Will he even last through a playoff game if he's trying to play how he has played up to this point?
I do think there is some little magical energy around Lamar. Same, we're about to talk about Nick Foles here. There's some little magic energy around Nick Foles. there was something, again, Lamar reminds me of Tebow. He had that little it factor that inspired guys around him. All right, welcome back to the show. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley.
Yes, sir.
Joined by Eric Dickerson and Tony Gonzalez. All right, let's head to Philadelphia, where Nick Foles did it again, throwing for a franchise record 471 yards in the Eagles' last-second win over the Texans. Philly has won two straight since Foles took over for injured starter Carson Wentz and has the Eagles in the thick of the final NFC wildcard spot. Philly has scored 30-plus points in each of Foles' two starts, something they did just once with Carson Wentz. All right, listen, I tweeted this out over the weekend that Carson Wentz is better than Nick Foles, but I'm not sure Carson Wentz is better for Doug Peterson. And the way that Philadelphia runs their offense and wants to run their offense, Nick Foles has less talent, so he sticks to the script. Mm. And Nick Foles can throw the ball downfield pretty well. I think for Doug Peterson, Nick Foles is actually a better quarterback. Just for Doug Peterson and what they want to do with that Philadelphia offense, Carson Wentz more talented, the better quarterback. But I just don't think that game he played yesterday and what he's done, I just don't, what he did last year in the playoff run, and I know he didn't have the greatest start to the season the first couple of games, but I've just seen too much to say that I'm not saying get rid of Carson Wentz.
I'm listening. Keep going. Keep talking.
I'm not saying get rid of Carson Wentz, but there's a chance Carson Wentz could come back and play this year, I wouldn't be – I'd have no interest in it.
Okay, you're going to rip your pants on that fence. Go ahead and say it. Say it. What you going to say, Whitlock?
Carson Wentz is better for Doug Peterson and the Eagles than – I mean
– Nick Foles?
Nick Foles is – than Carson Wentz.
And you tweeted that out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let me hit this Twitter.
The hell?
No.
Only thing I don't trust about Carson Wentz is his health, which, look, if you're a player with injuries and injury concerns, that's always going to be on your resume. But other than that, the thing about a backup, I've been a backup before. I don't think Tony, Eric, hell no, Eric Dickerson. I remember doing that rookie year. Lord. When you're in as a rookie, this is the mindset. When you do a little, they give you a lot of credit. And when you're a starter, when you do a lot, they kind of give you a little credit, especially as a quarterback position where you get so much credit and blame and criticism. And it's weird how that mental dynamic works. You see just these spot performances. You don't even see a full film cycle from Nick Foles. You don't see five straight games. You see two, three, four, and then you're like, put him in there, insert him, and let him get the full the entire gamut, the entire season. But here's a telling thing about Nick Foles. He didn't even sign up for a starting position. Why not? Maybe he knows something we don't know as well. So it'd be fool's gold to chase Nick Foles as the franchise quarterback. Some team will. I'm sure that's going to be an offer this offseason that is going to be too big to pass up. But for my money, stick with Carson Wentz and make sure you do your best to protect him and let him go out there and show that talent. That's better.
Man, last year Carson Wentz was going to possibly be the MVP of the National Football League. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, this year
and Nick Foles was the MVP of the Super Bowl.
Yeah, but still, mm-hmm. I would still take Carson Wentz. He's the most talented, and I think you're right. I think he fits what Doug Peterson does best right now. I think he follows the script where Carson Wentz sometimes probably goes off the script, almost like Ben Roethlisberger. Like, I'm going to do this, you know, I'm going to make it work. You know, and Nick Foles, he's a journeyman. He's been around. I mean, and like you said it best. I mean, sometimes you don't get to see him play all the time. You don't see all the film. We look at the film of the starter all week, all along, all year. All of a sudden, Nick Foles can say, oh, we forgot about him. Yeah. But like I said, he's going to follow the script. He's going to throw the ball to Alshon Jeffries like he did with Durant, going to throw it up high, yep. Let him catch. And where, you know, Wentz might, you know what, I'm going to run it or I'm going to wing it. I'm going to do something different. And that I think that doesn't work.
Nick Foles, we got to admit it, though. There's something magical that's going on here. I mean, if they get into the playoffs, they are back. They are back at that team that we thought that they could be after a chance to maybe go repeat for the Super Bowl. And it's with this guy at the helm, and you talk about Doug Peterson. That's Doug Peterson's fault. I mean, but going forward, I would stick with Carson Wentz. He's my franchise quarterback. But Doug Peterson, you got to fix yourself. This has nothing. Forget about those players. If you can't call a game for Carson Wentz, then something's wrong. Frank Wright did
before
he got out of there. But you see what he's doing now with Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck's back to an elite status in the NFL. Doug Peterson needs to get his mind right to coach these guys. But in the meantime, I've been there. You were there. If they get to the playoffs and Carson Wentz has a chance to come back, you better stick with Nick Foles because the lightning's there right now.
Yeah.
And I've seen it with Rich Gannon and Elvis Gerback that year when we first came into the league. You got to go with the hot hand right now. There's something beautiful going on, and his teammates feel it.
But
they're
excited. No different than last year. But once he won the Super Bowl and the MVP and he said, I'm back on your team, he still was the backup. So there's nothing changing in that. Look, I'm going to go with the hot hand, but that doesn't mean you're the hottest talent or potential we have on our roster, which is going to be a healthy Carson Wentz. You're talking about an MVP in a Super Bowl, which is amazing. That's one big, huge game versus an entire season up to injury week 13. Carson Wentz was doing that week in, week out. So I'm not going to get caught up in that deception of or deluded to saying Nick Foles is the answer. He's the short-term fix, but long-term.
We can't go back 2 or 3 years. We have to add in the information we have at this point. Carson Wentz has been beat up health-wise.
Yeah.
And so that changes the equation. And we saw him this year. To me, part of his struggles, I wouldn't put on Peterson. I'd put it on maybe recovering from the knee injury. This isn't completely analogous. But Dick Vermeil faced this situation in St. Louis with Kurt Warner, a guy no one had ever heard of, was bagging groceries, played in Arena Football League. They had Trent Green. He was supposed to be their franchise quarterback. And Trent Green got hurt. Kurt Warner revealed himself to be who he is, and they stuck with Kurt Warner. Again, I'm not saying Nick Foles is Kurt Warner, but there is something with Nick Foles and Doug Peterson that works at a really high level.
I'll give you one more, that really hurt my career, Rich Gannon. Remember he was a journeyman and floating around? Yeah. Boy, Rich Gannon got to Oakland, it was like, who is this guy? And Nick Foles is 29. Like, we're acting like he's old because he acts old, you know? But no, this is still a young quarterback on the right side of 30. Maybe this is the Rich Gannon Oakland situation as we could talk about, but Carson Wentz has showed me enough where I'm still rolling the dice for him.
I like Tony's point, though. If they qualify for the playoffs, you stick with Nick Foles. And if they have another run with Nick Foles, we'll revisit this conversation. If they made it to the Super Bowl 2 years in a row with Nick Foles,
could you imagine?
That would be a different conversation.
Okay, but we know the NFL is risk averse. So what if you go with Nick Foles going forward? And then it doesn't work out.
If I got two Super Bowls in the bank,
you're good, huh?
I care less at that point.
Eli.
House money. All right, thanks, Eric. Thanks, Tony. With Lock and Wiley, we're joined now by NBA champion Dante Jones. Dante Claus, as we're calling him today. It's quite the jacket, Dante.
PBA.
I almost wore that same jacket, Marcel.
Don't you dare.
You've been twins.
To go buy the hot sauce.
Let's talk about LeBron James and his eventful weekend. On Sunday, LeBron apologized for sharing controversial lyrics on his Instagram story that quote the song ASMR by the hip-hop artist 21 Savage. The lyrics in question say, we've been getting that Jewish money. Everything is kosher. This comes fresh on the heels of LeBron's third episode of The Shop on HBO, which aired on Friday night and featured LeBron attacking the NFL while Rams star Todd Gurley sat just a few feet away. LeBron said, quote, in the NFL, they got a bunch of old white men owning teams, and they got that slave mentality. And it's like, this is my team. You do what the hell I tell y'all to do, or we get rid of y'all. So I'm appreciative in our league of our commissioner. He doesn't mind us having a real feeling and being able to express that. All right, so obviously when I heard this, I was none too pleased. I'm a football person. I try to be a fair person. I don't think these comments are fair. I don't think they're accurate. This is my problem with the show, The Shop. There is no resistance. There's no pushback. There's no discussion. Because as soon as that falls out of his mouth, the first thing I'm gonna say, well, hold on, man. Colin Kaepernick got to play the whole year and take a knee. He didn't get immediately removed from the NFL. We still got guys in the NFL taking a knee. How come you ain't took a knee? How come no one in the NBA's took a knee? How come when Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, Chris Jackson did this, immediately removed from the league by David Stern? Is David Stern have a slave mentality? Did the owners in the NBA have a slave mentality? My disappointment with LeBron James is he's someone that is addicted to social media, and most of his thoughts that are being publicly expressed now are Twitter and Instagram deep, and it's beneath him. The guy wants to be more than an athlete, wants to get upset if someone says, hey, man, just stick to basketball. These type comments are what make people say, man, just stick to basketball. You're not even a serious, thoughtful person. You just saying SH to get attention.
Mm. Look, there's a responsibility that comes with anything that you want in terms of greatness. If you want a great platform, there's going to be responsibility. He's a great basketball player, the greatest we have playing right now, so therefore there's a responsibility to take care of his craft and do the things on the court. But if you want this social platform, then there's a responsibility as well. I'm disappointed in this comment because, one, I played in NFL, and studying history and obviously the effects of slavery, I see very, very few parallels, and even those shouldn't be jolted for attention as these comments were. And that's the problem with journalism right now, is everyone's trying to jolt you for your attention just to make a simple point. You can make an eloquent, sophisticated point without going to slavery, because the consequences of slavery are completely different than the consequences of being in the NFL and getting disregarded by an owner. Case in point. I was able to translate whatever I was able to accumulate on the NFL football field to this opportunity, which we all know in slavery, once those situations occurred and you disagree with the owner, this wasn't the result. Something even better. This is better than my NFL playing career. So I damn those who say that this is the same as slavery. Here's another issue that you have to look at when you're talking about the whole slavery and NFL, NBA concept. NBA, you guys are partners. And don't get deluded while you're partners. It's just because you got guaranteed contracts and y'all make a lot more money. But we're treated as employees because it's a non-guaranteed contract and there's lesser money. So therefore, it looks like they don't respect you the same. But it's really, do you respect and trust a partner the same as an employee? You want to say yes, but in reality, you don't. They don't come to the NFL's owners with Hallmark cards. They come with checkbooks. And it's a heartless experience that you guys may not see the same because you are in a different place. But don't get deluded in thinking that they still don't look at you guys as employees, just gainfully employed, high-earning employees.
Well, I think he's speaking to the nature of the NBA owners as being more progressive. And if I speak to your point right there, you guys want to be partners as well.
Yes, we do.
They just don't give you the opportunity to be.
Right.
And you have an NFL player looking him in the eye as he's saying this and shaking his head and nodding with acknowledgement. So you have a marquee player in the NFL looking at him who's saying, I work in television.
Who's not objecting
him and putting him in his place? Who's basically agreeing at that point in time? So would I have said that comment in that way? No. But do I understand what he is trying to say? And maybe he didn't say it in the right manner. I do understand what he's trying to say. NBA is more progressive as ownership. The demographic of owners is basically the same. It's not a bunch of minority owners in either one of them. But what he was trying to say is that we're more progressive. We tend to cater toward the players' self-expression, how they are on and off the court.
But
NFL players seem to be used as commodities.
But when the players took a knee or did something disrespectful to what was felt disrespectful to the national anthem, Chris Jackson run out of the league. There are guys still kneeling in the NFL.
You're speaking to something that happened over 20
years ago. I got it. There are guys still kneeling. No one in the NBA is kneeling. LeBron ain't kneeling. LeBron, they talk, oh, they let us wear T-shirts. This is childish commentary. Okay. They let us wear T-shirts. Oh, my God. Stop the presses. It sounds like a little child. They give us candy. This makes them progressive. Was Donald Sterling progressive? honestly?
Well, you know, the thing
not
about...
Not at all. and they acted right away on Donald Sterling. However...
Acted right away?
However...
Well, they have a rule. Let's not extract it and take it somewhere else. The rule in the NBA and Major League Baseball is there will be no protest during anthem. The rule in NFL didn't exist. So they got caught with their pants down, and then all this backlash has occurred. But I don't know which way you like it. Do you like it where they say, hey, you can't protest, but there may be consequences? Or do you like it where you can't protest at all, but you can wear your T-shirt? So let's not act like, that's what I'm saying. Is there a delusion going on
here? I don't think it's fair to say LeBron James is not kneeling, because that's not his expression for what how you choose to express himself.
Listen.
Just because NFL does it doesn't mean the NBA do it. We're two different sports
on
two different playing fields.
No. Let's call it what it is. He doesn't really believe it, or he would take a knee. All of this, everybody throwing on a cap, everybody throwing on these Kaepernick jerseys and all this fake, oh, look at me, I'm support Kaepernick. Get on the damn knee and back it up. Quit fronting. Quit faking the funk.
Knee is not the only way you back him up. I mean, I'm sorry.
Look, by contract, you could, by your own volition, but by contract, they've already come to that agreement. They've already come to that place where the NFL wasn't at that place. I'm not going there on LeBron's comments. I'm just saying, look, let's just really look at what slavery is, and let's look at what the professional athlete experience is. And as you sit up here with two professional athletes, this is not post-slavery. This consequences.
1,000% agree. But this isn't the first time in these comments that he has on Instagram. It's not the first time. And this is where, again, I just say, quit, get off of Twitter and social media. He can't handle it. He's drunk. Go back to his comments. When you go back to the thing on the gate where he compared himself to Emmett Till's mama, this dude constantly doesn't know what the hell he's talking about and goes too far because he's drunk on Twitter and social media, and he's turned into a race baiter. He wants to get upset that Phil Jackson, to a reporter, used the word posse. But it's okay if I come back and generalize about a group of people he doesn't know, oh, they got slave mentalities. Has he sat down with any of these NFL owners? But he can generalize about them and say slave mentality. What could be a more vicious insult than that? But you get upset because Phil Jackson used the word posse with your friends. Stop it, man. Get off Twitter. Move into the real world. This is why serious people don't take him seriously. It's a nice little gimmick, this social justice deal. It's a nice little gimmick and this little gimmick of support for Colin Kaepernick, but you won't take a knee. You really don't believe it. It's all for social media, and it's soured me on a guy that I think, honest to goodness, I believe he has good intentions. I really do. Social media is doing this to people. It's dumbing down our conversation about race and important issues, and we just try to assassinate each other's characters rather than trying to truly understand each other. And just, you said the NBA makes more money. Completely disagree with that. The NFL takes care of more people.
No,
you come from a big family.
The NBA economy is smaller, but we still know that the NBA players individually have a higher average salary. That's all I'm saying.
But I get it.
Yeah, because a fewer of them.
You take care of 53 versus taking care of 15. Trust me, you sit down at the dinner table, you get more chicken when there's less people. And so,
we can't eat something else on this conversation? Of all conversations we could.
I'm just talking about what I like. but I'm sorry. I have higher expectations for LeBron and the status and the position he holds and wants to hold. Elevate your conversation, man. Don't be a hypocrite. If you don't want to be generalized about, why generalize about others?
I think we're harping too much on the analogy. And the analogy, while I said I do agree with you, the words, I don't think he understands how they strike the individual, because it basically calls them a slave owner. And that is kind of harsh. That is very harsh. However, the mentality of the owners and the way the players feel like they are not as equal as you look to a sister organization in the NBA, and they're not treated in the same light.
Don't play basketball.
That's not what the answer is.
Okay.
That's why they have a players
union. I'm gonna tell you why it is the answer. Because sometimes I feel like, man, I wish people treated me the way like Denzel Washington. Literally. Man, I wish that, you know, and boy, why doesn't the world treat me the way they treat Denzel? Well, how about go on a diet, Jason?
No, go ahead. No, the answer is learn how to act.
And do all, yeah. But again, I've chosen this lane.
I've chosen not to go on a diet, so I'm going to get treated this way. If you play football and they're trying to take care of 53 guys and injuries are as prevalent as they are in football, there just isn't likely to be guaranteed contracts, and so you're not going to be that kind of partner. The NBA pretends that they're partners with their players.
Yeah, look, I totally agree with the pretending nature that is now being called progressive nature by the NBA. Look, trust me, the parallels do exist between the NBA and NFL, except you get injured after you sign your contract, we're going to act like we're still partners because we got to protect that money we already giving you versus we don't give you the NFL, we let you go. If they could let you go, they would let you go in the same right as us. But I'm not going with slave mentality and old white men for this reason. Do we understand what slavery was?
Right.
And do we understand what the professional athlete experience is? And for anybody of any enlightenment to make those congruent, you miss me as soon as you say that. We're not dealing with those same elements. Those are life and death elements. I am giving my family generational wealth. Regardless of whatever treatment you want to say I had in my non-guaranteed state, I walked out of there multi-millionaire, able to give that down. Tell me someone through slavery ever given any of that platform an opportunity. That's where I missed with the analogy.
Dante, appreciate you being here. I want to be crystal clear, man. I think LeBron's a good guy, well-intentioned, needs to do better. Time to get antisocial.
Bring it on, baby.
My favorite segment. Our social media manager, Darnell Smith, is in the house.
Yo, yo, yo.
Darnell, you want to give your lady a shout out, man? She's in the building.
Chanel Daniel, soon to be Chanel Smith. I love you. Thanks for coming out to support. Let's do it.
Nice little Christmas sweater. Where are you looking right now? We are the world is on.
Come on, swag. Let's go. Christmas spirit.
Shout out to the fiance in the house.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Love it. All right. What's popping on them Twitter streets?
Yeah, starting off in the NFL, where Baker Mayfield is still throwing shade at his former coach, Hugh Jackson.
Throw it.
After clinching the win against the Bengals, Baker ran down the Bengals sideline and gave Jackson a strong stare down with a Joker-like grin on his face. Twitter, of course, loved it, and even NFL analyst Adam Rank tweeted, "Find somebody to hate the way Baker Mayfield hates Hugh Jackson." All right, guys, does Baker need to squash the beef with Hugh?
My initial gut reaction was yes. Let's cut it out. You've gone too far.
But?
And then I transitioned to, man, this is what's driving this dude. This is a little dude that walked on at two different universities, plays with a chip on the shoulder, looks for things that motivate him, and clearly his relationship with Hugh Jackson motivates him, and so it's hard for me to say cut it out.
Yeah, I wouldn't cut it out. If that's your mental makeup, you got to do what fuels you. If this is how you get octane, man, go out there and gas yourself up in this way. I've seen all types. And it's not always success-driven. Like, we always look at it, if Michael Jordan does this, and, oh, well, because he's Michael Jordan, he could get away with it. There's some guys who are much lesser than Michael Jordan but still need to do it that same way. Look in the crowd, look at somebody who slighted them and said, I'm going to go get it this way. So respect for Baker Mayfield, who does it even before he gets the result.
The only thing I would like from Baker Mayfield is I need a detailed explanation of why.
Why?
Because what he's doing has real impact on Hugh Jackson. Hugh Jackson's reputation was already bad.
Mm.
This here is just fueling that even more, like, damn.
You know what sports is? Competition. You know what? There's a winner and there's a loser. You get on the wrong side of me, you must lose at all costs. Look, I understand the PR element of it, but if I'm Baker Mayfield, I don't care about your resume. That's on you to fix. On me. Help me get these points.
We all got to eat.
Hey, and I'm going to get mine.
You ain't eating no more. All right, Darnell, what's next?
All right, moving on to the Saints, who clinched home field advantage throughout the playoffs after a huge win over the Steelers. Saints cornerback P.J. Williams posted this Instagram video of the team celebrating in the locker room afterwards. Even Coach Sean Payton was turning up with the team. Look, y'all, they celebrating like they just won the Super Bowl. Are the Saints clearly the best team in the NFL now?
I'm not going there.
Yeah.
They're going to have the best record, but they got a problem in their secondary.
Mm-hmm.
Eli Apple is an issue, and the Saints can be had. And, you know, what it comes down to is I don't think there is a best team in football.
Thank you.
There's going to be somebody that wins the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I take exception with clearly, because there is not one team, AFC or NFC, that's clearly sticking above the pack. Matter of fact, there are more teams that can get into the playoffs than will win the Super Bowl. Think about it. Like, there's going to be 14, 16 teams. You're like, yeah, they can win the Super Bowl. Oh, I'm sorry, we're only taking 12 of y'all. And there's going to be teams up in Pittsburgh. That's a team that can win the Super Bowl this year and probably don't make the playoffs. It's a wild year in the NFL, and there are so many teams around the pack, despite what your record is. It's going to be fun playoffs to watch.
Got no problem with them celebrating, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Not at all, man. Have fun.
Yeah.
Turn up. Yeah. Right.
We too old to be saying that.
Yeah, that's true. I probably...
You can say it. We can't
y'all say it. Y'all can't say that, yeah. I don't know what slang y'all used to use back in the day.
Let's go.
Anyway. moving on to a huge upcoming matchup between the Titans and the Colts. Both teams will enter Sunday night on the road. The Titans have won 4 in a row after beating Washington on Saturday, and the Colts have won 3 in a row and 8 of 9 overall. The Colts won the first meeting in Week 11 in Indianapolis, my city. Both the AFC South teams are 9-6, and the winner of the regular season finale will go on to the playoffs. So who y'all got?
I got the Colts.
Yes, sir.
Andrew Luck.
There you go.
Yeah.
They don't too much of the ball.
Come on, Marcellus.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I love Derrick Henry right now and how he's plowing over boys. But Andrew Luck in the Most Improved Player Award, I like to see that as well. I'm not going to lie. This game doesn't get a lot of my attention. Like, my energy meter doesn't go high for this one. Win or don't. I like, just give me whatever team wins, and then we talk about this. Sorry, Tennessee. Sorry, Indianapolis. Not high on my radar because I don't think these two teams are really going to be there then.
I think, though, I kind of agree with you, but I think the Colts are capable of losing this game, even with Mariota sitting out. The Colts make it hard every week, it seems like. Yeah. They're always having to come back and have some kind of miraculous rally.
Yeah.
So even without Mariota, I think Tennessee could be a bit of a problem for the Colts. All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, on to the Super Bowl, where it was announced that Travis Scott would be joining Maroon 5 as the halftime performers of the game. Multiple celebrities have begged Scott not to perform because he would be betraying the boycott against the NFL for how he's treated Colin Kaepernick and his handling of the kneeling controversy. One celebrity who's been very outspoken on the subject is Meek Mill tweeting out, he don't need that. He on fire already. Stay strong. Y'all think Scott should cave to social media here?
No. And I want to know why Meek Mill was at the season opener of the NFL this year. I think a guest of the Philadelphia Eagles. Mm-hmm. But now, regular season games, I guess, are different than the Super Bowl. And so Travis Scott should give up his money, his platform to enhance his brand at the Super Bowl. Why?
Yeah, yeah. this is bad because, one, if you really just extract what they're saying, basically they're calling out all the players who don't take a knee and protest, saying you're not down with the cause if you don't do what we do. Now, think about that. That's sad because there are a lot of players who are fully in support of Colin Kaepernick but don't have to protest in the same exact ways. So now, if I'm Travis Scott, who has a dream of performing at the Super Bowl, because I don't do it the exact same way you want to protest, and I have exceptions where I've seen you do and support the NFL, now I'm a problem, which we all know that goes to other places. Sad place to be in if you can't express yourself fully.
You got a thought, Darnell?
Yeah, I mean, to me, I think, you know, agree with you, Marcellus. I feel like they're putting Travis Scott in a bad position. Because now if he does perform, now it's like, you're not for the cause. Yeah. If he doesn't, he's taking money off his plate. So he's in a lose-lose right now.
I don't get this. And this is why I say this isn't thought through. This whole little thing of football is somehow bad and the NFL is somehow bad for black men. I don't get, and so we got to bring down football. I heard Al Sharpton say this, we got to do, I'm like, man, 70% of these players are African-American. Millions of, $90 million a year for each team dedicated to team salaries. This industry is creating a lot of black male millionaires, but we want to damage it because of one person, Colin Kaepernick. One person. Let's bring down 1,700 guys in the NFL. Let's weaken that. 70% of that 1,700 guys are black, but let's weaken the NFL because Colin Kaepernick, he's that important.
Well, it's not just Colin Kaepernick. It represents something bigger than Colin Kaepernick, which he became the face of that. Look, don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. Fix the issues. Let's talk about it in terms of partnership or even if in times of protest. But let's not throw out the entire NFL. I wouldn't be sitting here without the NFL and countless others. So let's temper our
Merry Christmas, Darnell.
Merry Christmas.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our Geico approval ratings for Mike Tomlin. Oh, boy. Santa Claus, huh?
Not even.
If I saw that coming down my chimney, I'd call the police.
First of all, where you grew up at, it wasn't no chimneys in the project.
That is true.
Where in the hell is your spirit at, bro? Come on, ain't this Christmas time?
Yeah.
Damn, come on, man, let's just start the...
What's in the bag? It doesn't look like were we naughty this year? That's a small bag, Sam.
Hey, look here, what you remember to say? Anyway, hey, look here, let me do this real quick here. Chestnuts roasting on an open fire. Jack Frost nipping at your nose. Yuletide carols being sung by a choir. And folks dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows.
I don't know the word.
Now that's how the hell you supposed to start a show.
That's pretty
Come
good.
Come on, nephew.
Let me show you the highlight from our discussion about
Come
Mike
on,
Tomlin.
Man.
Bobby
Here's our
Womack
highlight.
Over here. What are you doing?
Here's our highlight. Tomlin is part of the problem in Pittsburgh. He's not the entire problem. He's just part of it. If the Steelers move on from him, I won't object.
They lost their best running back, franchise running back, who was number two receiver. Then they lose the backup, who was amazing himself. And now they're down to a one-dimensional attack, which is focused on Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown. But Mike Tomlin, to me, not the issue. A lot more issues on this roster than that coach.
All right, Uncle Jimmy. Marcellus and I disagreed about Mike Tomlin. I think he's part of the problem. Marcellus doesn't think he is. What's your take?
Once again, you don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Get him. Get him, Santa.
There you go.
Get him, Santa.
All right.
Why?
First of all, look, let me explain to you. Back in 1992, Robin Harris, great, late great comedian, came up with a movie. And the movie talked about this right here. Okay? Remember, it said, Robin Harris, movie starring Ben Roethlisberger, Antonio Brown,
Did you watch
Juju Smith-Shiesty, and Le'Veon Bell as the runaway.
Runaway.
Them baby kids, man.
Oh, baby kids.
You know what the hell that is. You know what they are.
They don't what?
Them baby kids.
They don't die.
They don't. I'm trying. Who the hell you gonna get to coach them, Jason?
Anybody would love to coach the Steelers.
Jason, the baby kids. You remember baby kids, right?
Yes.
Remember, small world. It's my world. Baby kids don't die. They multiply.
They multiply.
That is true.
You run around here blaming Mike Tomlin like them his kids. Them ain't his kids. Them the Pittsburgh Steelers kids, man. Pittsburgh Steelers organization hired them badass kids. Now you want to sit up here and clip Tomlin. The Pittsburgh Steelers organization is the one that need the vasectomy. They the one that hired them badass kids.
Stu,
listen. The Steelers hired Tomlin to deal with and supervise those kids. That's the job.
Yeah.
You can't control Bebe's kids. They badass kids. That's why they call badass kids. Okay, hey man, look here. My third wife, ex-wife, Maydessa, had four badass kids from some previous marriages. What nothing I could do with them.
Marriages?
What nothing I could do with them.
And you
That's badass for no reason. I decide I'm going to take them to Six Flags in St. Louis. God know I ain't going to put them on an airplane. And man, they got to St. Louis. They try to tear down the arch.
Stop.
Bro, I swear to God. They up here talking about. We Maydessa's kids. We don't die. We multiply.
Why are they grunting like that?
Because you know Juju Smith-Shiesty got that doo-doo in his diaper.
What?
You put no blame on Mike Tomlin, none?
Hell to the no.
Whitney.
They need to give him some more money for dealing with all them badass kids. See, you ain't got no kids. Marcellus, how come every time something go wrong, they want to blame the parent? I got an idea. Why don't you do something with all them badass kids? I got an idea. You got problems in your home? Put one of them kids out. Put that big fat one with the beard out. How old is he, about 40? Put him out the house. He causes trouble with them kids.
Who are you? Who's that?
That fat one that throw the football, Roethlisberger. He's about 36. Put him out the damn house.
All right,
listen. Causes trouble with them kids.
We got to give our approval ratings for Mike Tomlin.
Small world.
I'm dropping Mike Tomlin from a 68, I believe, to a 65. I previously had him at a 14 in job performance. I now have him at a 12.
Yeah.
All-time greatness goes from 18 to a 17. character and authenticity stay the same. I have Mike Tomlin at a 65.
You're a hard evaluator, if Mike Tomlin as a coach.
Right now, they're missing the playoffs, Marcellus.
He's a role player
but
coach.
It's his fault.
It's about right now.
All right, right now, he's still an all-star coach. Look at what – I had to drop him in job performance, obviously. The Pittsburgh Steelers on the brink of not being in the playoffs, but still tremendous in terms of who he is and status, character, authenticity. Second most wins behind Belichick, even a Super Bowl champion coach, and that's just a role player coach. Hate to see what the sorry coaches are in your grading scale. The sorry ones, there's a lot of them.
Right, they're missing the playoffs, Marcellus. Merry Christmas, everybody.